Welcome to the Texas Wine Scene Podcast, the most up-to-date information to help you prepare for your wine tasting weekend. I'm Mike, your Texas Wine Scene correspondent, bringing you all the wine happenings in and around the great state of Texas, from the High Plains to the Hill Country. If you love Texas wine, you've come to the right place. Let's take a trip. Had the opportunity to attend the Lone Rangers wine tasting event in High Texas at William Chris Vineyards, where there were multiple wineries from California, Washington, Oregon, and Texas that were all highlighting their version and style of France's Rhone Valley varieties. From Picpoul Blanc to Mourvèdre, there were some outstanding single varietal wines as well as some Rhone varietal blends. I got the chance to speak to a couple of our Texas wineries who are producing some excellent expressions of Rhone Valley wines, discussing various topics such as Texas terroir for these varieties, aging and barrel programs, as well as the Rhone Rangers organization, their mission, and their future plans here in Texas. Take a listen. Thank you for joining us here on the Texas Wine Scene Podcast. I am your host, your Texas Wine Scene correspondent, Mike Cole, bringing you all the wine happenings in and around the great state of Texas. We're here at William Chris Vineyards in High Texas at the 2025 Rhone Rangers Wine Tasting Event. And I'm here with a gentleman who's going to tell us a little bit about his winery and what they are pouring here at this event. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I am Spencer Iga, one of the winemakers over at McPherson Cellars up in beautiful Lubbock, Texas. So today, here we are pouring our Marsan Roussan 2022, beautiful, clean, oily wine. And then we have our Claret Blanche. This is the first vintage that we have produced of this variety. I'm very pleased with how it turned out today. A lot of great feedback because it's the first place we've released it.
Okay.
We released it to the public. So a lot of great feedback. People are loving it. And then we have our EVS, and that is our Earth, Vine, Sky, Wind, Blow.
Okay.
So that's a variety. It's a wine with five different varieties in it, all Rhone, Mourvèdre, Carignan, Semi-Sauv, Grenache, and Petit Sirah.
Okay.
So this is a fun little red wine that we love to put out there in the market. It's got a great label. Windblown for the beautiful Lubbock weather that we have up there. Always blowing.
Okay. That's awesome. Are there any particular varieties that you guys, make in terms of Rhone varieties that are a little bit challenging to make that you know of?
So I would say Grenache is probably the hardest variety to deal with on Marsa. Up on the High Plains, even though we have the heat and everything like that, we struggle to get a lot of color out of it.
Okay.
So we're not sure if it's the crop yield, whether we need to go lower or whatnot, but we're not big on overripe fruit at McPherson Cellars.
Okay.
We really like to let the fruit express itself in the right way, right to the correct wines. And with Grenache and the High Plains, you really have to let it get, really phenolically ripe. And that's causing the sugars to jump up way too fast. So you have a very high alcohol wine.
Sure.
And it's not what we are about. So I would have to say that's probably the hardest variety to work with and to really make a very nice Grenache.
There at McPherson, for the most part overall, even without the Rhone varietals, is the hands-off approach kind of you guys' wheelhouse in terms of just letting the varietals express themselves? Or do you like to throw in a little bit of oak here and there? Or do you mainly stick with maybe stainless steel on the whites? How does your program look and your vinification processes look?
So because we work with so many different varieties, I think Texas is still in the mindset of we're trying to figure out what grows well.
Okay.
I think, I mean, curiously, we've found a lot of great varieties that have grown here, such as Sangiovese, Italian varieties, a lot of Spanish varieties as well. A lot of these grows do fantastic. Okay. And over the years, our winemaking process has changed because originally the fruit quality was really not there.
Okay.
So we had to intervene quite a bit. Recently, the past 5-10 years, it's dramatically changed. Our growers are doing such a great job delivering beautiful fruit to us. So it makes our job almost, you know, easy in a sense where we can, you know, really let that fruit express itself.
Okay.
On our reds, we love using oak, but we don't overdo it. We love integrated oak, you know, just really allowing that fruit to speak with the, not overpowering it and letting that fruit speak.
Gotcha. You did mention some of your growers doing things the way you guys like for your program. Could you speak to some of the growers that you guys may be using that we talked about a little bit earlier that are making fantastic fruit, so all you got to do is make the fruit work?
Yeah, Farmhouse Vineyards, they're fantastic people to work with. Two families. We've been working with them for, probably 8 years or so now. We get a lot of reds from them and a little bit of Roussan as well. With everything they have given us, you know, we work hand-in-hand with them. They're such great people, very knowledgeable as well, and always willing to experiment and work with us. And
okay.
They're using sea algae and doing all kinds of fun things up there.
Yeah.
Then Leahy Vineyards, one of the largest vineyards in Texas, sitting at about 1,000 acres. They've really helped us, you know, procure enough fruit, because a couple years ago, fruit was getting very difficult to find. So, you know, they're a big vineyard, but they are the most professional people that we have really dealt with.
Okay.
Really being punctual. I mean, that's one of the biggest things. You know, delivering that fruit right on time.
Okay.
You know, all kinds of things like that. And communication is key there. And they have brought in a lot of people from out of the state, people from in the state, to really help them develop their vineyards.
That's fantastic. Where can our listeners find your wine? What is the wine hours? The operating hours at your winery.
So our tasting room up in Lubbock, Texas, is open Monday, Tuesday through Saturday, probably 12 to 6. And then in the summertime, it goes from 12 to 7.
Okay.
And then we are distributed almost all over Texas. So, you know, HEBs, Total Wines, some spots, liquor, like high-end liquor stores.
Sure.
And then our biggest push is at the restaurant level. So okay. We really want to be... got some great restaurants throughout Texas, and I know we already are. We're really pushing to get even more to get Texas on the map.
There you go.
And then we are also in about 13 states, so distributing outside of Texas.
Very nice.
Trying to introduce, you know, people around the U.S. to Texas wine and what we have to offer.
Where can we find you on socials?
Socials, Facebook, just check McPherson Cellar.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for joining us here on the Texas Wine Scene and talk about your wines and what you're pouring here in High Texas. We sure appreciate you.
Thank you for the time.
Cheers. I'm here with
Doug Reed.
He's going to tell us a little bit about his winery over at Hawk Shadow and what they're doing in terms of Rhone varietal grapes. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Yes, we are located about 30 minutes east of here, so we're north of Dripping Springs. We grow Mavedra. We also do Tempranillo, but in the case of the Rhone varietals, we primarily focus on the Mavedra.
Yes, sir.
Seems to do well. The vineyard was planted in 2005. We did our first vintage in 2011.
Okay.
And so we've done Mavedra every year except for 21, which was our massive freeze. But it's been great. One of the things that's about unique about our facility is we do everything with gravity, so we don't pump any of our wines, which is unique. So we use three different levels.
Yes, sir.
On the estate, we're built into the side of a hill, Our cellar is all limestone.
Wow.
So it stays 80 to 100% humidity year round.
Okay.
About 60 degrees plus or minus a couple. So provides very good barrel aging, which allows us to age our wines longer.
Good.
Our average age of our wines is about 3 years in barrel.
Okay.
So it gives us a chance to let the wine develop completely.
Yes.
And provides, I think, a greater complexity and balance to the wines.
Could you tell us a little bit more about your barrel program, talking about ageability? Do you use new oak, neutral oak, or how does your barrel program look like?
For different varietals, we use different types of oak flora.
Okay.
The more the Bordeaux varietals, so that Cap Franc, those are new French. And I'm generally about 80% new oak for those. Mourvèdre, in particular, we do that in about 50% new oak, and it's generally a mixture of Hungarian oak and French oak.
Roger that. In terms of the soil type, you mentioned, is it limestone for your caves?
Yeah.
What about the terroir for the grape varieties that you're comfortable with Rhone varietals or any other varietals that you have in your program?
Yeah, so our estate is all just a limestone rock.
Okay.
So our grapes grow real slowly.
Okay.
It also really limits our production. So we generally produce about a ton an acre. But we get really good quality out of that.
Does it make for more concentrated fruit when you're getting such low yields on that fruit?
It does. It definitely helps.
Okay. That's fantastic. Could you tell us where your what's your hours of operation at your facility, and how can our listeners get your wines? If you're not in distribution, that's fine, but where can our listeners find you and your wines?
Okay, again, we're north of Griffin Springs off of McGregor. We're open 7 days a week from 11 to 5. And our wines are available at the winery or online, so hawkshadow.com.
Okay. Yes, sir. And do you guys deliver during the summer months, or would you rather our listeners come out to the winery just because it's hot during that time?
We don't ship during the summer months.
No shipping during the summer months. Okay. Well, sir, we surely appreciate you taking the time here on the Texas Wine Scene to talk about Hawk Shadow, and hopefully, come out there and do some tastings, and everybody out there, just some fantastic wines that we have here. Real quickly, there's two wines on the table. Can you just kind of briefly talk about, or actually there's three wines on the table. Can you briefly talk about what we're pouring here at the wine event?
So the first is the white. The white's called Follet. It's actually based on the original name of Pitbull Blanc, which is Follet Blanc. It's everybody knows it as Pitbull Blanc.
Mm-hmm.
This was aged about 4 months in new Hungarian oak. So they do a lot of new Hungarian oak for whites and rosés.
Okay.
The second one is, it's called Bella Rose. It's 100% Simso, and this is aged about 5 months in new Hungarian oak as well.
Okay.
So it gives it a lot of depth and character by putting a little bit of oak on that.
Gotcha.
It's been very popular today.
Yes, sir. I can see.
and then the last one here is our Mourvèdre. It's 2019 from our estate. So the grapes were 14 years old.
Wow.
When we made this, they really, the last, the 13, 14 time frame that our estate really started to come into its own. And you can certainly tell the difference in the quality of the fruit. So this has been a real pretty, 19 was a real pretty year for us.
Yes, sir.
And so this was aged in a mixture, about 50% new. It was probably a couple of barrels of Hungarian, the rest was all French.
Okay.
So a little bit more than 50% French on that. And so it it gives it a lot of depth and character. Been very popular today.
I know a lot of your wines have been very popular today. I had a hard time pulling you away to kind of get a few words. It seems like a lot of people are crowding around the table. I had a fantastic time tasting here. Again, thank you for taking the time to talk with us here on the Texas Wine Scene. Cheers. We are here at the 2025 Rhone Rangers Wine Tasting Event here in High Texas at William Chris Vineyards. And I'm with the Mr. Andrew Sides of Lost Draw, and he's going to talk a little bit about what he's pouring today and a little bit about the winery. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This is a fantastic event. It's made up of producers, wineries all over the country. We have people from Oregon, Washington, California, and then obviously Texas. There's a large Texas contingent out today, and that's always good to see.
Yes, sir.
But yeah, we're celebrating Rhone varieties, and if you are a fan of Texas wines, you've probably had or tasted some good Rhone varieties that are grown here in our state. And every winery that is a producer of Rhone varieties is out here if they're a member of this association. And they're kind of featuring some of the top Rhone wines that they have for this year.
Cool. And what are you pouring for our listeners today?
Yeah, so we have a GSM, which is a Grenache Syrah Mourvèdre blend. That's a pretty typical Rhone blend that is done all over the world, and we do it really well here in Texas. Ours is from the High Plains, so all vineyards up in the Lubbock area. And then we're also pouring a Picpoul Blanc, which is a white variety. It's kind of the flagship white wine for us and one of the truly sustainable grapes for our state, and I feel like it's one of the top white varieties in the state.
Okay, cool. That GSM, you said it's very popular around the world. A lot of people produce that. Vintage to vintage, what have you found as terms of the leader in the band when it comes to a Grenache Syrah Mourvèdre blend that usually takes the lead, or does it change every year for you guys and the vineyards that you use?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's the beautiful thing about the blend is in Texas, every vintage is a little different. Grenache Syrah and Mourvèdre are three very different grapes when it comes to the time that they, you know, have bud break and then the way that they ripen throughout the season. So on cooler years, certain varieties are better. On warmer years, one of the varieties is kind of the standout. So I love making this wine because the blend does change every year. And this particular vintage, which is 2022, the Grenache is the leader. It's 48% Grenache, 42% Syrah, and 10% Mourvèdre. That's not always the case. So sometimes it'll be like almost a third, a third, a third. There are years the Syrah is the leader in the blend, but it's a fun wine to make because you can take these different components from the vineyard, every vintage, and you can kind of build the wine as a winemaker. And that's some of the fun artistry that we get to do.
Absolutely. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your winemaking style? Are you guys a little bit more hands off? Do you like to put a little bit more oak, age things more in oak, or do you kind of, you know, dabble in a little bit of the stainless steel area? What is your winemaking style and how you guys get down on your wines out there at Lost Draw?
Yeah, we're a very low intervention winemaking facility. We truly feel like about 80% of the winemaking happens in the vineyard. So we're very, very hands-on on the farming side of things. So we farm things very closely and have a very specific style and method to how we farm the vineyard because we feel like that directly translates to quality in the fruit and then obviously quality in the wines. So we stay pretty hands-on in the vineyard and then pretty low intervention in the wine, in the winery. But we use different formats to achieve a different textures and styles of wine that we're producing. So you'll see some stuff fermented and aged in stainless steel versus concrete versus, traditional oak barrels. But we're about 20% new oak on our red wines and mostly neutral across the board on whites and the rosés.
That's cool. Hey, Andrew, I sure appreciate you taking the time to talk with us here on the Texas Wine Scene podcast. Could you let our listeners know where they can find your wine? What are the hours of operation at the winery and how they can reach out to you guys on the socials?
Yeah, the winery is in Johnson City. It's 1686 U.S. Highway 90, so right outside of Johnson City on 290. We're open 7 days a week at the winery, so you can come out, get online, book a reservation. That's the easiest way to let us know that you're coming. And then we also sell a few of our wines in wholesale, primarily at HEB is the largest retailer.
Okay, cool. Once again, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us on the Texas Wine Scene podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, look, you guys got to get out to Lost Draw and take a taste of some of these fantastic wines he has. This GSM and Picpoul Blanc was absolutely fantastic, and I'm sure a lot of the other varietals that they make over there at Lost Draw are singing just as well. So we look forward to coming out to Lost Draw and doing more on wine tasting. Andrew, thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for having me.
Cheers. Here with Josh Fritchie of Tatum Cellars, and he has some fantastic wines he's pouring for this event. Josh, thanks for taking the time to talk to us here on the Texas Wine Scene.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Josh, what you pouring for us this for this event today?
So I have my Trois Etoiles, which is a Marsan Roussan Viognier blend from Uplift Vineyard. We've got a Rosé of Grenache, a straight Grenache, Syrah, and Mourvèdre.
Okay. Rhone varieties. I know when I was reading about the Rhone Rangers coming to town, and I was excited to see that Tatum Cellars was on that list of Rhone Rangers. Can you tell me a little bit about that organization and how you got involved with the Rhone Rangers?
Yeah, so I focus on Rhone varieties and have from the start. It's 100% Rhone varieties. Heard about this organization out of Paso Robles that, you know, pushes Rhone varieties, and ended up Larry Schaefer, the president of the organization. I started seeing him on all these Facebook groups, and so I started pestering him and seeing what I could do to join. So joined about a year ago, and then we just did this tasting in Paso 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So that was my first event with the Rhone Rangers. We flew out to Paso and poured there. Raised some eyebrows on Texas wine. So
now, do you find that a lot of the Rhone varietals grow well here? Is that why you wanted to kind of get in with the organization so we can continue to champion these Rhone varietals here in Texas?
Yeah, all the Rhone varieties for me, and you know, in my 15 years in this industry, they've always performed. Some Syrah can be a little tricky in the vineyard, but like Mourvèdre, late budding, they just work. And I've always loved what the Rhone varieties can do here in Texas, especially in the Hill Country.
Okay. Do you typically try to do a blending of the varieties, or do you like to kind of see if you can do a 100% varietal of some of these wines, or what does that program look like for you?
Yeah, so, you know, I get Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre, and I make Rosé out of Grenache. I make a straight Grenache, a straight Syrah, a straight Mourvèdre, and a GSM.
Wow.
And the same with the Marsan Roussan Viognier. I'll do a little bit of each as a straight variety and then do a blend as well.
Okay. Can you talk to our listeners a little bit about your winemaking style and maybe a little bit about your barrel program, if any? Do you like to age long-term? Do you like to use 100%? 50%. What does your program look like along with your wine style of making wine?
Yeah, so I'm an old world wine fan. In fact, it was Rhone Valley that got me into wine. I like those kind of old, dusty, dirty kind of, I don't really like super fruit forward. I like more of the kind of dusty, earthy, light bodied stuff. And then as far as the barrel program, mainly neutral oak.
Okay.
Some of these 2020s did see, I do a max of about 15% new oak, depending on the variety. Like the Mourvèdre saw about 15%, the Grenache saw 10%, and the Syrah was 100% neutral. And I do everything surly. All my reds are surly aged, so I never rack them. Try to make them reductive.
Okay.
And just keep the lees stirred during the aging. And I do anywhere from 16 to 24 months on the reds.
Cool. Let's transition to a little bit about your winery location there in Johnson City. Well, first, I would like to talk about, where did the name Tatum Cellars come from? I think it's a pretty cool story. If you can start there about Tatum Cellars and what you got going on there at your location.
Yeah, so I was the winemaker here at Will and Chris. And in 2012, we were having a daughter and decided on her name. Her name is Tatum Rose. So I bugged Chris to let me make Tatum Rosé. So for the first few years, I was just doing Rosé, one ton, 50 cases for about 4 years. Slowly built it into reds and whites, and then just opened a tasting room in Johnson City on the square two Februarys ago. So just came up on my second anniversary.
Cool. Now, I know you got some pretty cool stuff going on there at the winery. Talk to our listeners a little bit about your hours of operation along with that vinyl record situation.
Yes, so I'm currently the winemaker at Ron Yates. So I'm in the winery Monday through Friday. I open up the tasting room at 4 on Thursdays, and I run from 4 to 8, and then Fridays 4 to 8, and then Saturdays are 12 to 8. And on Thursdays, I do vinyl night, so you bring a vinyl, we'll spin it, and you get 10% off.
That's cool. What kind of vinyl, what kind of music drives you when you're in the winery doing your business? What are you jamming out to?
I'm all over the place with music. I tell people all the time that, you know, music is one of those universal languages. So for me, you get music, food, and drink, and you can touch anyone in the world, even if you can't speak their language. With one of these three universal languages, you can reach somebody. So that's kind of the whole idea behind the tasting room is good wine, good music. You got small bites and stuff. So, yeah, keep it simple.
That's cool. Now, I know you got another winery of sorts coming into Johnson City. It looks like Johnson City is getting a little bit of more of that movement with Vinovium coming in. I know they're going to be doing some things. They're going to probably be your neighbors pretty soon. Are you excited about...
Yeah, I think they just had they opened this past Thursday. It was their first full day in the new spot. They took over Henry Croson's spot.
Right. And so looking for Johnson City to get even more. I love the small town feel of Johnson City. It's a quaint little spot. It's really neat. For that area. Josh, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us here on Texas Wine Scene. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about where they can find your wines? You did mention in your tasting room opens on a certain day. What are your hours of operation? Let us know where we can track down Tatum Sommelier.
Yeah, so Thursday, Friday, 4 to 8, and Saturdays are 12 to 8. I'm right on the square in Johnson City on Nugent Street, right across from Nice and Easy, a little cocktail bar. And as far as 99% of my wines are sold through the tasting room.
Okay.
I do wholesale to a handful of restaurants in Austin. So Daidue is a big one for me. And Brian's in Johnson City is a big one for me.
That sounds cool. We had Joe stop by and kind of give Josh Ritchie a little bit of a hard time on the microphone here. But Josh, again, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us on Texas Wine Scene. Ladies and gentlemen, look, get on out to Johnson City and hop on into Tatum Cellars. They're open a little bit later on Thursdays. They're spinning the vinyl on those evenings, so bring some vinyl out. Josh will put it on the tunes and have a good glass of wine. Josh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers. We are here at the 2025 Lone Rangers Wine Tasting Event here in High, Texas, and we're here at William Chris Vineyards, and I'm here with the owner, Chris Brundrett, and he's going to be joining us and talk about a little bit about the wines and about the organization. Chris, thank you very much for taking time to talk to us.
You bet. Happy to be here.
All right, cool. Can you tell us a little bit about the Lone Rangers organization and how this idea came about of you helping to bring Lone Rangers here to the Texas Hill Country to help, continue to put Texas wines on the map as the face and ambassador of Texas wines?
Sure. Well, the Lone Rangers is a group of domestic producers in the U.S. that all do Lone wines or Lone varieties or focus on Lone varieties. And they do their best to highlight those Rhone varieties, which is pretty remarkable. And we became part of the Rhone Rangers, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Started doing events out in on the West Coast, which is awesome, and trying to get Texas out there. And really, Larry and the squad decided that Texas would be an interesting place to host. And so they called us and said, hey, would you be willing to help put this together? And I was like, absolutely.
Cool.
There's more and more producers need to be, doing unique marketing efforts like Lone Rangers, and it's we got to let people know that we're here and go put our wines side by side with anybody in the world. And I think like events like this show that You know, we don't need to apologize for our wines anymore. They're world class, and you know, we can go pound for pound and be our unique self.
I tell you, I've been rolling with Texas wines and wineries for a number of years myself, and know that we're making some fantastic wines out here. And I was excited to see the Lone Rangers come in into the house here in Texas Hill Country. In terms of the wine varietals from the Rhone Valley of France and what we're doing here in either the Texas Hill Country or High Plains, what are some of the varieties that you guys work with here at William Chris, and what are some of the varieties overall, even at different wine wineries, that you think are performing well for us here in Texas?
Sure. Morvedre, obviously. Big fan of Morvedre, and I think it grows really well in the Hill Country and the High Plains. We've seen some really great world-class wines come out of that. Grenache, Syrah, Cinsault, all wonderful varieties. The Syrah is a little bit tougher to grow, but okay. we're seeing some really beautiful crops. If you get a chance, that 2020 Del City or Syrah is lights out. So, on the white side, I mean, Picpoul. Marsan, Roussan, there's some incredible wines coming out of Texas that are truly unique, and there's nowhere else in the world that wines taste like they do from the High Plains or the Hill Country, and I think that's really something we're celebrating and sharing.
Roger. We're in a huge barrel room here at William Chris Vineyards, and there's just, I don't know how many barrels are in here. About 4,000 barrels. This is fantastic. Can you tell us a little bit about your barrel program, since we're in a room full of barrels? Do you guys like to work with used barrels, new oak barrels? What does that look like for William Chris Vineyards?
So generally, real roughly, we use about 20% new wood every year. Okay. And so we're constantly introducing new wood. We keep about 6 or 7 coopers at any given time. Not really a whole lot more than that. We're always trialing a few different folks. But we have our kind of 4 or 5 coopers that remain pretty constant. We use almost exclusively French and Eastern European oak. Okay. We use very little American oak, and that's just a profile, stylistic profile decision. As far as we've taken in used barrels in the past, but we really don't do that anymore. We haven't in a long time. Okay. I have a couple sources of used white barrels that I'll occasionally reach out and use. But other than that, we try to keep all of our oak program clean, and we're always conscientious of Brett and anything else, and making sure that our wines are clean as possible, especially in a low sulfur environment.
Yeah, Chris, it seems like you're one of the faces of the Texas wine scene and Texas wineries and Texas, you know, overall. I know you travel a lot. I know my listeners, I follow you quite a bit on some of your travels. I know you were abroad here probably several weeks ago. Was it Japan?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about, man, your journey when you go outside these borders, trying to champion Texas wine and continue to put us on the map and getting all these accolades and all the recognition? Can you tell us a little bit about that journey?
Sure. Again, I think it's really important that as a state that we're doing our absolute best by sharing our wines with other areas, other states. Even locally, right? How many people distribute in Austin or Houston, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's a chore, but it's a chore worth doing, because it's really hard to just depend on people coming, across your cattle guard and in your driveway, right?
Right.
So it's really vital that we get out and share it. And the way we do is, the way we succeed is getting out there and grinding and getting out there, making new connections, build new relationships, put liquid to lips. And if we can do that, then we can buy more grapes and support our growers and support our farmers, which is vital. We've got a lot of growers that are hurting right now, and there's such a golden opportunity even in our backyard. Texas is the third largest wine market in the country, and 3% of the wine Mm-hmm. Yeah. In Texas, it's grown in Texas. Right. And it's like $3.7 billion industry. So, like, let's get it to 5%.
There you go.
Let's get it to 6%. So, yeah.
On one last question. You mentioned farmers. I know we got a big farmer in the house over at Farmhouse Vineyards. I know they supply a lot of grapes to a lot of different wineries across the state. Are there some farmers you would like to mention that are growing some wines and distributing them to different wineries that are doing a fantastic job, across the state?
Oh, shoot. There's too many to list. I mean,
okay.
I tell you what, shout out to our guys in Del City. Those guys are doing a great job. They farm smart and enable us to build wines that we can afford to go get on the shelf at $19.99, which is a tough thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Also, all our growers in the High Plains, man. There's so many great folks. Andy Timmons, you couldn't do it without them. The folks over at Alta Loma, Family Vineyards. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Really great folks out there laying it all on the line and putting that money in and fighting the frost. And and then here locally, I tell you what, the guys at Vintage Press do an amazing job for us. And the Favel family, we got so many great growers. And then our team out at Uplift, I mean, our vineyard management team is doing such a great job. It's really cool to see.
Cool. Chris, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us on here on Texas Wine Scene. We look forward to talking to you down the road and coming out and doing more tastings. We definitely keep following you guys and all the events that we got going on around here in the state. Sir Keith Champion, Texas Wines, we'll continue to support you, support William Chris Vineyards, and support Texas Wine.
Absolutely, man. I hope next time we talk, we're working through the Texas Farm Winery Permit. It's some legislation that we have coming up, which I think is really important. To be able to expand the rights and privileges of people that grow grapes and make wine and make Texas wine. If you can get that message out that there's some really great opportunities out there to establish a marketing fund, too, for people that grow grapes and make wine and be able to have more tasting rooms and not have a cap on the amount of production you can sell direct to consumer, which I think ultimately helps wineries, it helps vineyards, and it helps vineyard workers.
Is that some legislation that are going to be coming online here soon?
It already is. We just had a hearing in the House of Representatives on Tuesday, and which went really well. Unfortunately, there's a couple of people that are against expanding the rights and privileges of Texas wineries, which is kind of a bummer. But, hopefully the education gets out there and we get across the finish line.
Cool. Thanks, Chris. Yep. Appreciate it. Cheers. I'm here with the Mr. Larry Schaefer, and we're here at the 2025 Rhone Rangers Wine Tasting Event here in High Texas at William Chris Vineyards. And I'm going to let him talk about the Rhone Rangers, the organization, and we're going to talk a little bit about his wine label and also about bringing this event to the Texas Hill Country. Sir, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Rhone Rangers? Can you tell my listeners what the Rhone Rangers are if they do not know about the Rhone Rangers?
Sure. The Rhone Rangers are a nonprofit educational organization that's really aimed at raising the awareness of domestically produced Rhone varieties. We know in this country most consumers know about five different grape varieties. That's just the nature of the beast.
Yes, sir.
So every group needs to kind of have an advocacy group to fight for it. And so that's the way we look at Rhone Rangers. We've been an organization for about 40 years, but we're still emerging and evolving. We've always put on national tastings in California, and over the last couple of years, a number of Texas wineries have come to those tastings and have poured at those tastings. And we've gotten to know Chris at William Chris and Doug Lewis. We've gotten to know a couple of others, and they expressed interest in us exploring coming out to Texas.
Okay.
And up until about 3 months ago, we had 4 Texas wine members. Now we have 21.
Wow.
So I was instrumental, as well as Chris and a couple of other people, really introducing the concept of Rhone Rangers to the wineries here in Texas to put this together to raise the awareness of these varieties and to show the quality of Texas wine. I mean, that's my whole thing. If you're in California, Texas wine for most people is an oxymoron. And I don't think it should be.
It should be.
And so I moderated the panel this morning. I'm very high on trying to promote grown varieties wherever they're grown.
Okay.
And this has been a tremendous success. And we see this as the first of many years we'll be coming out to this area.
Great. Now, is there something about Rhone varietals that attracted you to begin with all those years ago to say, hey, that's what I want to work with. Those are fantastic varietals. Is there something or one of the varietals that grabbed you to start doing this process?
I'm a fan of the underdog.
Okay.
Rhone varieties have and always will be the underdog. But what attracts me to Rhone varieties are the variety of varieties within the group. We can go from, put it into orchestra terms, we can go from a piccolo to a French horn, mm-hmm. and they're beautiful on their own, and they work so well together.
Right.
We can go light and crisp and acidic and big and bold and everything in between. You can't really do that with a lot of other groups of varieties. Bordeaux, you can't do that. Burgundy, you can't do that. So I think there's a place for every single variety we work for. We just need to introduce people to that. And that's the purpose of events like this. That's the purpose of opening bottles and sharing them. Because we can think we know what a wine tastes like. You got to taste it. You got to try it. And if you like it, great. If you don't, that's fine too. There's plenty of other wine out there.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Now, you guys do a lot of these events across the country, or is it just California? I know now in Texas, maybe Oregon. What other areas?
We traditionally have done road shows in the past, but our organization has kind of gone through a transformation. We're a nonprofit, and it's expensive to put on these events. And so we've learned over time we have to be very strategic of what we do. We want to be around for a very long time. And so we kind of backed off doing events other than in California. We did a small one in Oregon to support the Oregon producers. But this is really the first time we've done a major event outside of California in a number of years because we're being cautious. But we knew we'd have the support of the Texas wineries. We know people in Texas drink wine.
Yes, sir.
And we know that they are a little more open-minded in terms of trying things. And that's kind of a recipe for success for what we're doing here. So this hopefully will be a springboard for us doing similar events in states like Colorado, Arizona, if we can get the camaraderie. Because what's amazing here is the number of wineries that know each other, have worked with each other, and get along so well.
Absolutely.
And that's imperative to an event and an organization like ours. Because we're a member-driven nonprofit organization. We have one part-time employee. That's it. Everything else is done by volunteers. I don't get paid to be president of the board. I do this because I'm passionate, and I want to share that passion with other people.
I can definitely hear the passion in your voice. And let's switch gears a little bit. You have a wine label yourself. Can you talk to us a little bit about what your wine label is and maybe a couple of the varieties, maybe what you're pouring here for us today after this event?
Sure. So I have a label called Tercero. So I didn't start out in the wine business. I actually started in the music industry. So I grew up in the L.A. area.
Okay.
I took pictures of a punk band in the L.A. music scene in high school.
All right.
I went to school, got out of school, got my degree in business, and actually worked in the record industry to start with on the finance.
Okay.
And I like to say that's like going to work for Ben & Jerry's and never being able to taste any ice cream.
Oh!
So it was kind of soul-sucking. So
yeah.
I left, went into publishing, education, publishing, and trade publishing. But about 25 years ago, I got to a point where my mind wasn't being challenged.
Okay.
Life's too short. I started having kids. I needed to lead by example. So I decided to kind of switch gears. I started taking classes at community colleges.
Nice.
Kids who could have been my kids, taking all the science courses I never wanted to do.
Oh.
I did that for 2 years.
Yeah.
I worked in Temecula down near San Diego for 2 years part-time. I transferred back to UC Davis, where I'd started as an undergraduate, and got my master's in viticulture and enology.
Very nice.
Come full circle, Davis has an online winemaking certificate program that I now teach one of the courses for.
Oh, cool.
I'm not a winemaker first and foremost, though. I'm a consumer and an artist. So I look at the wine industry a lot differently than other people do. I don't care what you drink. I just want you to understand what you drink and enjoy what you drink. And if it's not my wine, that's fine. I'm not offended whatsoever.
Okay.
I like to say, if you're a musician, you want to play.
Nice.
You want people to hear what you do. Can you control whether they like it? You can. You can modify it. But as an artist, do you really want to do that?
That's fantastic.
So for me, I am blessed to do what I do on a daily basis. I want to share that. And I get to share it with people. Chris is the same. I mean, this can't be sold, sir. I mean, people who make Rhone varieties, I like to say, we make wines without pretense. If you go to a Cabernet event, you kind of feel like you need to get dressed up, right? Come here, we don't care.
Yeah.
Because these are wines for that every person. And we appreciate that and want to share them. So with my own brand, I started working at another Tide of Texas. I started working at Best Park of London.
Okay.
That was my first job out of school. Very strong Tide of Texas here. And I worked there for about 8 years before it was time to do my own thing. Tercero is my brand. I've been 100% doing it. It started in 2006, but it's really been about 10 years, 2014, that I've been able to concentrate 100% on it. I concentrate on known varieties, but I'm a curious winemaker, so I do make things other than known varieties, too.
Okay.
I learned a long time ago never to say never, or always. So I want to leave opportunities open. And so today I'm pouring, I've got way too many wines.
Okay,
I bring more than most do. But I've got a couple of whites, so I'm pouring a Picpoul Blanc. I'm pouring a Claret Blanche. I'm pouring Coumoise, which is a variety that is, I call it an unplugged or acoustic red.
Okay, I like that.
Huge berries. So we tend to think of red wines as being very dark and bold. This is on the opposite spectrum, but it is what it is. That's what Mother Nature gives me, and that's what I'm going to make. And then I have a Grenache, I have a Syrah, and I have a Mourvèdre as well.
Okay. Now, you mentioned, what Mother Nature gives you in terms of those grape varieties. In terms of your winemaking style, did you just kind of let those things just kind of happen? Or you vinify everything separately and say, that's kind of singing real good over there. How about this one over there? And putting that orchestra together, like you mentioned early, is that your overall winemaking approach?
My winemaking approach is to keep everything separate as long as I can.
Okay.
I really like having as much complexity as possible by keeping everything separate. And then if I'm going to blend, it'll be right at the end. But in all honesty, I mainly do single varietal, single vineyard wines.
Okay.
I do keep them separate, and I love what they show. And every year they're going to be different. I mean, I tell people, if you're a type A person, don't make wine, make beer. Beer is reproducible. Wine is not reproducible. We can try to make wine reproducible, but then you're fitting a circle into a square.
Sure.
And there are wineries that are great at doing that. That's their business. That's not what I want to do.
Okay.
And the longer I make this, the more I realize that's not what I want to do. So I do have some kind of philosophies. Like, I foot stomp all my red grapes. I ferment them with the stems.
Wow.
That adds tannin. That adds bitter compounds. It changes the aromatics of the wine. I like to say, using music analogies, which I like to do, it makes my wine more like old school vinyl. It adds scratches. It adds imperfections. Because I think wine is more interesting when it has character and personality and it's not overly produced.
That's fantastic. I hope that this event is not the last event. I'm hoping that we're going to be doing more in the future and continuing to have the Rhone Rangers in town. I think there was a really good turnout today. There was a huge buzz in the air. Like you said earlier, with William Chris and some of the other, Josh, Fritchie over there at Tatum Cellars, everyone helps each other. It seems like it's a helping vibe. Want to do, what's right for everyone and just kind of continue to push the industry forward. And so we hope that you guys will be coming back to do this again soon.
Well, our hope is not only to come back, but to possibly take it on the road. I mean, why not do this event in a couple of other cities in Texas?
Okay.
And so, again, being a nonprofit, being a conservative, we have to look at that and see if it pencils out. But if we can get the support, we would certainly go ahead and do something like that.
Well, I sure appreciate you taking the time to talk to us here on the Texas Wine Scene. Let my listeners know a little bit more about the Rhone Rangers and what we're doing here in the great state of Texas. Thank you.
And your listeners can go to rhonerangers.org, so R-H-O-N-E rangers.org, to find out more information about the organization, to sign up to get information as well, and to learn about all the wineries that are members.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Mike.
Cheers. I would like to thank all the wineries and winery owners and representatives who took a few minutes of their time to speak to us here on the Texas Wine Scene. I would like to send a special shout out to Chris Brundret, owner of William Chris Vineyards, and the president of the Rhone Rangers, Larry Schaefer, for planning, organizing, and executing such a fantastic event.
let's keep the momentum going and bring the Rhone Rangers event to some of our other major wine growing regions here in Texas. Well, that will do it for this episode. Thank you for joining me. I'm Mike Cole, your Texas wine scene correspondent, and I look forward to seeing you next time on the Texas Wine Scene.